Good morning, everybody. It is October 7th, 2021. This is the ADK Homeroom. I am your host, Frank. What a day we're going to have for you. What a day Bitcoin had yesterday, too. Oh, my goodness. We are in the middle of a blazingly glorious fall season here, heading into a Columbus Day weekend, going to celebrate Columbus, of course. Up here, I had a great poem, Columbus, appear a while ago, and I'll be rereading that over the weekend. Today, we're going to talk about how to start teaching kids about free trade, liberty, capitalism, enlightenment values. And the answer, of course, is to start with candy and Xboxes. This is a pretty good strategy for getting kids' attention and getting them engaged with the lesson. In fact, I have an amazing little laboratory exercise or experiment that it's really a bit of an experiment, and it's amazing. I love it. I got the kernel for it, the idea for it from an old EconLib post, which I can't even remember who posted it, but it's a fantastic activity to do with kids. Works with all different ages. And I will get to that in just one second. First, let me point out that when you do teach kids about liberty, that the age is important, of course. And what I'm going to be talking about is mainly about grades 6 through 12, although this amazing exercise that I'm going to give you, or experiment really, that I'm going to give you does work with younger kids than grade 6, to be sure. I have a kindergartner that it would work with too, without a doubt. And, of course, if you have some precocious younger children, they would be able to grasp a lot of these concepts here. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to give your kids some difficult stuff. They will be flattered that you think they can handle it. And if you read kids, I will have to do a podcast someday on how to read kids. It is an important skill for any teacher, and it's one of the biggest reasons why in-person learning is so much better than virtual learning, because it is almost impossible to read kids, at least with anywhere near the accuracy that you can do in person. It's almost impossible to read kids over the internet. It's like teaching blind and deaf. So this is mainly for kids 6 through 12. The exercise, the experiment, is going to work for kids younger. And I will try, this is probably going to be the first in a series, and I will try to start off each series with just a little bit of guidance for the younger kids before we get into all of the detail for the older kids. So if you are going to teach younger kids about liberty and about freedom, you know, start by asking them, what does freedom mean? Ask them what they're free to do now, what they're not free to do now. Start talking about donuts. Everybody loves donuts. Are you free to eat a donut now? What if when you got older, someone told them they could never have a donut again because someone else thought it wasn't good for them, right? Use food a lot in your examples. Use the five senses: smell, taste, hearing, seeing, touching, all these things. Just like writing, try to use the five senses when you're teaching. Ask the kids, you know, what if you grew up and you could never see your friends again because somebody gets to choose your friends for you, right? Do you want other people to choose your donuts? Do you want other people to choose your friends for you when you grow up? Right now you're a kid and you're still learning, but as you're an adult, tell me, what kind of donuts would you choose? Oh my gosh, then they'll go crazy at this. They'll tell you all about that. And they say, what makes a good friend? And they go and they talk all about that. And then you said, what if somebody comes along and says, no, you're wrong, and I want to give you a donut that tastes like toothpaste? What if I want to give you a donut that tastes like wood chips or grass, right? And what if somebody says, that's the best thing for you? Is that okay to do? Talk about freedom, point out that it means people get to choose for herself or himself. A person gets to choose for herself or himself, whatever they want, as long as they don't hurt anybody else. And for the younger group, you know, that's about it. Now let's talk about the older kids and get into a lot more detail here. Younger kids are still developing. They have a lot of other skills before they can get to this. if you want to get into freedom, do as I was suggesting there. But let's transition to the older skills, the older kids who have the skills to get into these sort of more abstract concepts. Now, it is Halloween time, and I did promise you the one of the most amazing experiments of all time in the social sciences as far as teaching liberty goes. So let's discuss that experiment. It works with young kids, it works with the old kids. It's amazing. And it's perfect for Halloween time. So you should try this. First, you get random assortment of candy. It has to be many different types of candy in there. You can get those bags. They have them at Publix or Safeway or Wegmans, wherever you go to shop. They have these bags right now of assorted candy, but make sure it has many different types in it. Get the more different types of candy, the better. So I would buy, you know, one type of mixed from one manufacturer, one type of mixed candy from another manufacturer. And then it doesn't matter. Don't worry about making sure you have enough of this kind for this person or enough of this kind to make it even for everybody in the class. No, you don't want to do that. Just buy a bunch of random candy. And it works for the bigger the class, the better. If you're doing it at home with just a couple of kids, it can still work. It can still work. But I'm going to go through as if you're doing it with a large group here. For a smaller group, you know, maybe you could get some stuffed animals and sit them out there and pretend that those are other students and act accordingly when we get up to that part. So here's what you do. You get this large assortment of random candy, and then you distribute the random candy randomly to all the kids in the class. If you just have a couple of kids, put, you know, some in front of one kid, some in front of the other kid, some in front of stuffed animal, some in front of another stuffed animal, and you keep going on. And now you say, all right, take a look at your random candy pile there. Ask them, do you think this is the perfect pile for you? Could it be improved? And let them see other kids' piles, and they're going to see some types of candy that they like better than what is sitting in front of them. And you'll say, oh, okay, so you think that maybe you could have a better pile than what's in front of you right now. All right, let's see how to make everybody better off. We're going to try two different ways, at least two different ways to start off to see how to improve your pile. First, to keep this like an experiment, let's make sure we're starting off from the same thing every time. So write down all the candy that is in front of you. Get an inventory of the candy so we can have the same starting condition, same initial conditions each time we do this. And then have them write down on some notebooks quickly what is in their pile. And by the way, you need to keep reminding them, do not eat the candy yet. That'll be obvious. Kids will ask you, yeah, you do not eat the candy yet. My classic line is, you don't eat the lab. You never eat the lab, you don't eat the lab. And yet kids always try to eat the lab anyway. At least not right away. Maybe at the end of this particular lab, you could have a piece of candy, but not during lab or before the lab. You do not eat the lab. So now they have written down in front of them their inventory, all of their pile, and you say, all right, here's what we're going to do for our first method of trying to improve everybody's pile of candy for them, because different people like different things. So the best pile for, you know, Aiden might not be the best pile for Braden. Everybody's name rhymes with Aiden these days, by the way, if you're not aware of that. All right, so you say the first method we're going to do is somebody's going to be the philosopher king. So you find somebody in your group to be the philosopher king, and you bring them up to the front of the room, and you say, okay, Caden, you're going to be the philosopher king, and you're going to have 1 minute to make everything better for everybody, or you could give them 2 minutes depending on your class size. And your job is to go around the room and put the different pieces of candy from one pile into another pile and make sure that everybody is happy and that everybody has a better pile. Ready, go. Don't give them any more instructions than that. And then you let them go around the room. Nobody else is allowed to move. Nobody else is allowed to talk even. In fact, for purposes of the experiment, I usually do the first time with no talking at all. So tell them no talking at all. Here you go around the room. Make things better. You have 1 minute or 2 minutes. Make everybody's pile better. Go. And let him or her do that, and she'll walk around the room and she'll try to get people to nod or shake their head. And that limited communication is okay. And she'll go to her friends and she'll make their piles better first. And then she'll go to somebody else and she'll try to make his pile by trading with somebody else, but somebody else won't want to make that trade. And, you know, things will proceed. And strictly enforce the time limit. After 1 minute or 2 minutes, depending on the size of your class, you say, okay, hold up. Now let's see. Every person here, rank the candy pile in front of you on a scale from 1 to 10. And have them write that down. Put it on a whiteboard. Have them come to the front of the classroom and write it up there. If you're in class in school, of course, your kids should not be sitting still ever, ever. For 40 straight minutes, you should always have reasons for them to be standing up and moving around the room. Some kids desperately need that. Other kids just need that a little bit, but you still should have them do that. So they get up, they come to the front of the board, they write down their average ranking 1 through 10 and how satisfied they are with their pile of candy. And then they go back to the pile of candy, still not eating it. Now, depending on your age, you can do some stats, some fancy stats, some advanced stats with what they have up there. At the very least, you should find an average. You know, even down in fifth grade, sixth grade, they can easily find an average. You can do the mean, you can do the median. If you want, you can do the mode, but I mean, nobody likes mode. Then in high school, right, you could talk about variance, talk about standard deviation, whether or not that really has a whole lot of meaning here. You could discuss that, but you could also just do the math for it real fast because kids need that. They need to understand what these statistical concepts are. Okay, so now you've done that and you say, all right, now we're going to wind it back. Make those Wayne's World dream scene noises. And you go back in time. So, in other words, you have them refer to their original inventory sheet, right? This is like Chekhov's rule for plays. If there's a gun on the wall in the first act, it better get fire in the second act. Same thing in the classroom. If you have kids write down an inventory in the first act, they darn well better use that inventory in the second act. Otherwise, they'll feel cheated, and they will start going to their phones instead of your classroom. So, now everybody uses their original inventory sheet. They go back to where they started. Now they're at the start, and you say, okay, guys. Now this time, we're going to try another method to improve our piles of candy for each person. Try to get your pile of candy to be ranked higher in your own individual ranking method. And this time, still no talking if you made the no talking rule for the first one. This time, any kid can trade with any other kid that he wants, make any trade that she likes, no matter what. No rules, no philosopher king. You know, circulating through the room, just trades from one kid to another, but still no talking because we're simulating an environment with limited information. And don't say anything else. Don't unless it's, you know, an emergency question or something like that. You really don't want to get into strategy here. You don't want the kids to discuss the strategy. You want to save that for afterwards so it's fresh and it's new. Also, you don't want people to be accusing you have bias or something like that towards one method or the other. So you just say go and you let them go. And this works so magically. It is so beautiful. I loves it. At the end of your 1 minute or your 2 minutes, which you should strictly enforce, and you should give warnings, right, to increase the drama, to increase the suspension. Ooh, the suspension is terrible. I hope it lasts. There's a little wild for you this morning. So you say that. And you give them the warnings and you give the countdown, 10, 9, 8, and you have these trade deadlines and you're like, oh, are the Yankees going to make a trade with the Red Sox before the deadline? Nope, they're just going to lose to them again. Sorry, Yankees fans. And you build that drama and then the deadline comes and you're over. Stop trading. Put that pixie stick back in your pile. I saw you do that, Nicholas. All right, so now you have them rank their piles again. And you have them do it on a different section of the board at the front of the room. They all come up. they put up their rankings, and it will be so much higher. It will be much better off than when you had the Philosopher King going around the room to, you know, to distribute according to the Philosopher King's rules. And then you do the statistics again, and you compare. And even with the statistics and the advanced statistics, you can see how much better it is. And then you have everybody sit down, and maybe you say, if you want at this point, you can have one piece of candy, or there are other experiments you can do after this too, right? You can do, first of all, at this point, I would say that the first method we did was like socialism, right? You have this party, this elite party that is going to decide for everybody else, or the government is going to decide for everybody else how to distribute the candy, how to distribute the wealth in society. And in the second method, it was free trade. Everybody just got to trade however they like and make their own trades without any rules coming down from on high. So the second method was like capitalism. First method was like socialism. Second method was like capitalism. And you point that out and you ask, what are the differences? What are the similarities? How would you describe socialism? How would you describe capitalism? What are the hallmarks? What are the characteristics? And then once you get done with those basic definitions, then you can say, all right, now we are going to try some variations, because maybe that wasn't real socialism, right? Classic argument, the no real Scotsman argument. Maybe that wasn't real socialism, right? Maybe what Stalin and Xi and CCP China, what they're doing is not real socialism, having one person or one party, one government just decide for everybody without any sort of process. Maybe it's everyone has to decide, where you all vote. And so you have one group of people who vote. And then you have 2 minutes to do that, and they all have to vote on whether a trade is okay or not. And you talk about the efficiencies in that system and how's that working out for you. Or you could try constitutional socialism, where you write down all the rules first that everybody has to abide by to restrict your trade. And you write down all those rules first, and then you have to make your rules according to that. And then when you do those trades, you say, well, who enforced this? And then you say, oh, we need somebody to enforce it. And then you have this elite party emerging again to enforce the rules. And you talk once again about the efficiencies, and you compare the rankings of the candy piles in that scheme to what you have with just a free trade scheme. And you keep going. From there, you can talk about equality and inequality. You can say, oh, does this person's pile match up to this person's pile? Did we have equal outcomes? Is everybody exactly right? Of course, they will not be equal. And then you can do it in terms of what candy is there. You can do it in terms of what candy makes someone. Should you do equality in terms of what candy is there, or equality in terms of a person's ranking of their candy? Should there be a forced ranking system? And you can get into all of that. Should you have a criteria that people have to use to rank their own candy, or should they be allowed to use whatever criteria they want to rank their own candy pile? You can go on with this in a lot of different ways. Eventually, of course, you should point out words like redistribution, words like taxes. Taxes would be represented here by the Philosopher King taking the candy before giving it to someone else. Benefits, you should talk about the word benefits and welfare. And that would, of course, be represented by someone receiving the candy from the Philosopher King. You could talk about the word trade. You should ask at this point, when you have a free trade, do both people benefit from it? Do they like what they get after their trade better in general? Or are they planning to make a future trade? Did you get any three-person trades? Did you start to see some spontaneous order emerging from your trades in that way? Some networks. Just a fantastic exercise, and you can go on and on with it. You can spread it out over multiple days. You can come back and revisit it after you have studied some real-world governments, some real-world systems. But today, we're just talking about what you do on the first day of teaching liberty. So you start out with that. You start out with that beautiful exercise, and then with the older kids, you do probably have some time to go on. You want to restart your class several times during class. So you restart your class after that amazing exercise. You might not have a whole lot of time, depending on the length of your class period, but you go into enlightenment values at the end, two quick restarts. First, you go into Enlightenment values and you say, all right, when did this idea of free trade come to Earth? When did this idea, this sort of capitalist system come to Earth? Well, the first modern economics textbook, often considered to be Wealth of Nations by a guy like Adam Smith. And you want to make Adam Smith real. Whenever you introduce a figure like this, you want to make him come to life or her come to life. You can talk about how Adam Smith was kidnapped by gypsies when he was 3 years old, then freed in a daring rescue. You can talk about how Adam Smith, when he was older, he was writing, he'd get terrible headaches and toothaches and shakes, and he would bang his head on the desk in his kitchen from the pain, but he would keep going. And you can make him seem like an actual figure, an actual person. People get invested, people are interested in the character then. And you point out that his book is called Wealth of Nations. You say, why wasn't it called Poverty of Nations? Well, because he didn't ask why people were poor. Poor was the natural state back then, right? People were always poor. People were always struggling to find enough to eat. Half your brothers and sisters were constantly dying before they turned five, or you know, and family after family after family, half the kids died before they turned five. So the question wasn't, why were people poor? People were always poor. This is the natural state. That's how God put them here on earth. The question is, why are some people in some nations rich? Why were they wealthy, right? And then that's the focus here. And then you move into your last thing for the day, which is to ask them, what is their answer for this question? Why are some nations wealthier than others? And in particular, the question that I found the most success with, it works like charm, is why is America the richest nation on earth? Right? Ask them that. Have them write down their top five reasons, and then they can put them on the board if they prefer. But then, and this is dramatic if you can get it to work out this way, if they could put it on the board, and then you have covered up on the board ahead of time all the reasons that they're going to write up there. So ahead of class, you should have written on the board or on your smart board, and you can just project it, or on a slide that you can just project at this point, you have written down all the answers that they're going to give, right? And it's very easy to say the reasons that they will write down is because America won a war, because America stole it. They took it from its citizens. They exploited people because they had a lot of natural resources, because they just got lucky, because America had the best technology, because America started off rich, because they had the best leaders, because of geography, because they had the most land that goes along with natural resources. And you write those reasons down, and then after the kids have their reasons down, you unveil it, and they'll see, oh, wow, okay, just about everything we put down here is over there, right? And you should circle it. Everything that they covered that was already on their list, you can circle it to emphasize that fact. And then you need to call attention to the ones that aren't on your list. There will probably be a couple, depending on class size and the power of the kids' thinking. And you always want to reward original thought, right? So unless it's completely silly, like, you know, it was the future home of the Oreo, and the Oreo is so powerful it could go back in time to make America have some amazing seed in its founding that made it the richest country eventually. I don't know. Something silly like that you don't want to support. But if it's reasonable, you definitely want to call out original thinking and point to that, because number one, the world needs more original thinking. But number two, when you get to free speech as a value and how it's necessary to challenge the status quo in order to move forward, and how difficult innovation is, you want to have built this long history in your classroom of pointing out how difficult original thought is and how rare original thought is. So original thinking, always to be rewarded. Make sure that you point out the ones that are reasonable, that the kids thought of, that weren't on your list ahead of time. And then, you know, of course, you point out all the reasons why you're the teacher. So you point out all the reasons why the common answers cannot possibly be correct, right? For example, you know, wars. Well, the biggest war that the United States fought in the 19th century, half of the country lost. And yet they were still among the richest countries in the world by the end of that century. Certainly didn't steal it any more than any other countries who had been in existence centuries longer and stole much more than the United States. And same thing goes for exploiting its populace. Certainly, You couldn't say that the United States exploited its populace more than many other states over the first 7,500 years of its existence. So how did it move from this position of not being a country at all to being one of the richest countries in the world? You can't really say that its leaders are smarter than any other countries in any measurable way. And as far as geography, Canada, Mexico, similar geographic benefits. So what gives? What made America the richest country in the world? And that's often a great way to end your first day. That is a point where the kids can go home and they can think about what that question was. Just like you often want to start your class with a question, you often want to end your class with a question. So I think at that point you have made it clear, and that has certainly taken you through an average first period on teaching liberty. And there's a reason why our school day has evolved into multiple subjects per day, because most people and most kids work better when they have several new starts, and you want to go on to a new subject after that and leave the rest of liberty for the next day. So, following my own advice, we're going to leave the Teaching Liberty series at that one after that first day, and then we will pick it up with the second day and Teaching Liberty Part 2 real soon now. Probably not tomorrow, because we have Poetry Friday and the Dumbest Pop Culture events of the week coming up on Friday and the News Roundup. But soon, folks, soon we will get to Teaching Liberty Part 2. It will be labeled as such so you can find it really easily in the podcast selection. And we're going to have, don't forget to check out the other podcast we're going to do today, talking a little bit about vaccine mandates and quarantines and friction in philosophy. It's a good one. Don't forget to subscribe. Check me out on Twitter, ADK Homeroom on Twitter. I will talk to you soon. Take care.